Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Conan.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this busy, busy Thursday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. I'm Spencer Israel, as always, joined by Joel O'Connor and Dennis Dick. This might be the busiest day of the earnings season, so let's get right to it. We've got a lot going on. Two guests for you today. Mark Chaikin will join us at 8:15. He's the founder of Chaikin Analytics. And then at 8:35, we're joined by Peter Chur. He's the managing director and head of macro strategy at Breen Capital. Jump into the charts. I want to let you know that today's show is brought to you by Chaikin Analytics, the winner of the 2017 Benzinga FinTech Award for Best Trading Idea, Platform, Tool, or App. The centerpiece of the Chaikin Analytics is the Chaikin Power Gauge, a stock rating that gives you a directional edge using a proven algorithm that uniquely combines fundamental data with technical factors and distills all that complex data into simple ratings so you can make smarter investment decisions quickly and easily. To learn more, go to chaikinanalytics.com. Mark is also holding a webinar today at 4:15 Eastern on the ultimate stock checklist and the best small cap stocks to buy today. To learn more about that, go to chaikinanalytics.com/webinar. So that's chaikinanalytics.com/webinars. I'm also pasting the link into our chat right now. But Joel, what's going on in the S&Ps at the moment?
Oh, we're green. We're green this morning, Spencer. Up 4.25 points. Weak close, but opened up 24.50. That's your low tick, probably boosted by the Facebook earnings, which we'll get into in a sec. Yesterday's high and the all-time high, 79.75. Current high, 24.80. So call that resistance for now, but we'll see what happens off the opening bell. Crude was looking at that just under the $49 area, and we got up there again yesterday and today. Cannot clear $49, so 3-4 tops in the same area. Let's see if crude's going to turn it around here and get back a little bit of that recent move. Gold up 18.30. We'll have to check with Brent here to see a reason why. The gold is getting a boost. That's a big move up a percentage and a half, 1267.70, up 18.30.
Not
Isn't much
it just in the contract roll, Joel?
Is it the contract roll?
Because, yeah, well, I'm just looking. GLD's not up at all. Here, if that's, you know, the issue there. GLD only trading up 12 cents. I would think there's got to be something with the futures there.
Wow, I can't believe that you got me on that, Dennis.
It's contract roll?
I don't know for sure, but I'm looking up. Silver's not up that
much. We're right around, you know, where it could be.
Yeah, I'm looking at the August contract here on the front month. So, I don't know. Let's see what AdGC is. No, that says August 2 here. Let's check. I mean, on the TradeStation platform's a little bit different here, but on the TS platform, it looks like we do have a rally. So I'll see if I stay corrected or not.
I'm just trying to hear it too. Well, okay. Yeah, because he had a big pop in gold towards the end of the day on the GLD, but the GLD is actually only up 12 cents. So anyways,
I got
gotcha.
You.
Okay,
it is. That's the D's. I'm looking at the D's. That's right. This is the D's and TradeStation still showing the August there. So
it is a roll.
Yep, there is the roll. Good job, Dennis. But let's get right. You got me. Good thing we did do a lunch on that.
271 stocks reporting earnings today. 271. It's got to be one of the busiest days of the quarter for sure. So obviously we're not going to be able to cover one stocks on the show. We'll try to cover the main ones, but there's other news too. So just before we go to all the earnings reports here, I want to bring you to Bristol Myers and Merck and also AstraZeneca. We had AstraZeneca, which is getting absolutely rocked. Bristol Myers down too. They got this drug, Spencer, and I kind of throw you under the bus because I didn't talk about it on the pre-market show, but Bristol Myers, AstraZeneca, there's some major drug news there, and it's not good news. And what is not good news for Bristol Myers and AstraZeneca is apparently good news for Merck. So give us the details on what happened here.
Yeah, AstraZeneca said this drug will be a doozy to pronounce, Imfinzi, plus it's tremelimumab is what I'm going to go with. Combination. The point is, I butchered that one. That was bad. Did not meet primary endpoint of a progression-free survival compared to chemotherapy. neuropathy. A Mystic trial is going to continue as planned to assess additional primary endpoints of overall survival, but shares did fall 15% after that headline came out.
This is an absolutely huge move for AstraZeneca. And Bristol Myers is in on this drug too, right? Aren't they developing it together? Or
I'm
pretty sure Bristol Myers is tied in here because Bristol Myers is down $3. I'm pretty sure they're tied in here somehow.
They might have had earnings too, I think.
BMY had earnings this morning.
I had earnings.
BMY had earnings this morning, yeah.
I thought Bristol Myers was tied in with this AstraZeneca drug as well. I don't know, maybe I'm not. Okay, so maybe BMY is just trained down on their earnings reports. So there's so much news here. It's trying to digest 271 reports and then figure out what the hell, you know, with all this other stuff too. So AstraZeneca absolutely destroyed. AstraZeneca's loss is apparently Merck's gain here because MRK is trading up 3 points in the pre-market. Obviously, I'm happy about that because I own Merck, long-term investment portfolio. I will say, though, I have seen Merck trade up before on news of other companies, you know, coming out with disappointing drugs and saying, okay, well, they got the competing drug, so they're going to be trading up. And I believe, you know, there was some research analyst saying Merck could trade up as much as 5 points on this. I will fade that call. I don't think it's going to trade up 5 points on this. And I've seen it before where, you know, we've been in Bristol Myers and Merck have opposite drugs as well, which is why I thought maybe Bristol Myers was involved in this one as well. But it's usually been the play to book profits when you see these pop on another company's. So 65, that being said, though, has already traded 448,000 shares of this one. It's traded a ton of stock. It's going to open strong. I just wonder if it doesn't start to leak. And, you know, you got a lot of overhead supply in here, Merck too, Joel. Wouldn't you say, I mean, here's a stock that was breaking down yesterday through a key support level. Now, all of a sudden, it's a windfall for anybody who, you know, has just, you know, had this on for a swing trader, just was picking bottoms yesterday. Get a 5% pop, and Merck is a big pop for a big, thick stock like.
Hey Joel, before you jump into technicals, more headlines. So AstraZeneca and Merck announced Merck will pay AZN up to $8.5 billion in total considerations. So
there's so much,
so much news around these
with
three.
Each other. Yes. It's so hard to figure all this out.
Exactly.
We need Adam Feuerstein.
We do.
He would figure this out for us.
He would know.
We don't follow all these little individual stories closely enough because obviously we're trying to follow 6,000 stocks. So, you know, we can't follow each one individually closely. But I will just say the Merck pop is because of the AstraZeneca fall here this morning more than anything. And here you are. So Merck is getting a big gain. AstraZeneca, a big loss.
Yeah, there's, I mean, that the last thing that Spencer just read sounded like it's good that AstraZeneca is going to get up to $8.5 billion. Maybe they're expecting more. But, boy, the technicals, let's just start real quick. The technicals here in AstraZeneca, I mean, it is down and it's not bouncing. So you see that 28.48 low, ADR here, not the primary market. Someone's making a stand at 28.50. If I was short, I'd be making a stand there as two. BMY had earnings. Really, we can go over those. Hit a low of 51.97, but you're getting a little bit of a bounce, so like the $52 area as support. And then Merck, Dennis, you know, that's worked a lot of times, selling the pops on this.
Yes.
It has. And it's not even, the thing is, why I'm not hopping out here at 65.32 is that
it's not going, it's not leaking.
Yeah, it's not leaking. And man, I mean, there's really no, I mean, there's a couple tops above 66 and 66.80. So, I don't know, a little bit early. I don't know if this is the time it's actually going to break out. But you're right, Dennis. On the last four, five, six occasions where you've had this news, Merck has been a great fade. Whether or not that will work again today, we will find out shortly after the open.
I still own it, Merck, in my investment portfolio. For full disclosure, no positions in AstraZeneca, or although I'm interested in AstraZeneca as a long-term value play, but maybe not at $28, maybe more at $26. But we will see. Let's jump back. Okay, so one more before we go to the earnings, and we might not get to an earnings even before. I just want to say that Viacom apparently out now on the bidding for SNI. It looks like it's going to be Discovery. Yesterday during the day, it was apparent that they were looks like Discovery is going to put a $90 bid out for SNI. That's not confirmed yet. Still just rumors. No official bid here yet. Viacom has said they're out of the running, so I wouldn't be surprised if Viacom gets a little bit of a lift because we know they hit it yesterday. So that's just, you know, a quick headline there. I want to jump into all these earnings reports. So like we said, 271 companies reporting today. Let's jump into the biggest of them all. The one that everybody's talking about is Facebook. It is now up 12 points here. Man, stock just a monster.
And here are some numbers for you. Q2 adjusted EPS of $1.32 versus $1.13. Sales of $9.321 versus $9.2 billion, so good EPS and good sales numbers. Daily active users, a big metric for Facebook, of course, up 17%. And another headline or another stat that I saw is that really what it came down to is ads on Messenger. And they had $9.2 billion in ad sales. 87% of that $9.2 billion came from mobile ads. And a lot of that is from Messenger. So ad sales continue to be a tailwind for Facebook.
Joel, you were asking me a question in the pre-market show. Why don't we ask that question to our listeners here as well?
Why would anybody hit this stock off that report? Not only,
I don't know.
Not only hit it, but hit it down seven sticks, down to 158. Unless, and I mean, we talk about this before, Dennis, and you talk about, you know, price movement and play, you know, being influential price, you know, maybe someone was just beating it down long to stock looking to buy it. I mean, I can't see any reason why if you would look at that report, you see a 20 cent beat, a slight beat on revenues. What would make you inclined to hit the sell button on that?
I don't know. It's, you know, you're just looking and Google. So if you were, you know, thinking that this is similar to Google, and Google kind of blew it away too. But, you know, what we were saying is both these stocks have run up a lot in the report, so they're going to need to blow it away to go higher. Google kind of did. So maybe they were saying, okay, well, these revenues weren't as great, you know, as maybe they could have been. So maybe they didn't blow away the revenues. So maybe, you know, we should hit this. You know, the news algo, and it got hit right away, you know, was interpreting that it wasn't a good enough beat. And it hit it down. But then you start looking at those numbers, like, man, those are good numbers. And I think you had probably after it got hit, and it traded down for a few minutes. After it got hit, you probably have some institutional money managers saying, look, these are really good numbers. And they started probably coming and licking their chops and buying 158 and 160 and 162 and all the way up to 165. And then the conference call started, and they started saying more good stuff. And, I mean, we've just blasted off since then. So now we're up 13 points on one of the biggest companies in the world. Incredible move, up 7.5%. I mean, it's been so hard to bet against Facebook. And if you're betting against it, you were rewarded for about 10 minutes last night. And I hope you booked your profits quick, because obviously after that, it's been the straight up. $178 here now. I mean, new levels, Joel. It's all air.
Yeah, we are 200. I got an order out at
200. I got some resistance up at 200.
Spencer, you're going to add?
The only thing, I was going to add one thing with regards to the conference call, Dennis. So they did say, the CFO did say on the call that to expect ad revenue growth rates at least to fall as the year progresses. I don't know if you're on Facebook, Dennis, but there are a lot of ads on Facebook right now. A lot of ads. So I think they're trying to stem that growth a little bit. Facebook's big new initiative now is video, right? They're trying to go the Netflix route. They're investing in original programming. They're having their own shows that they're making right now. So that'll be like their next big growth frontier, I think, and that could maybe replace ad revenue or at least replace a decent chunk of it as they sort of scale that back. But that's something to watch for, over the next 12 months or so. Okay.
Just real quickly.
Oh, they're really good. I mean, those ads, like, I hardly ever go on Facebook. And when I say I hardly ever go on it, I go on, like, when my wife says, oh, there's something you should go read on Facebook. It's, like, once every couple of months. You know, I go on Twitter all the time. I just don't use Facebook. I don't know. I never really got into it. My wife's on all the time, though. But what I'll say is when I go on Facebook, and even only going on once every couple of months, I get, like, stock market ads at me. I'm like, how? I've never post anything. How do you even know that I trade stocks?
It's
genius.
Know
like, if I'm on there all the time talking about stocks, it would be obvious. But I never post anything. Like, I never say anything.
Well,
zero.
It's all cookies. It's all based on your search history, Dennis.
Yes. Come on,
Dennis. Looking through my computer and trying to grab and saying, okay, well, we can go find there. I mean, it's smart. You know, that's smart tailored marketing there, so... You know, they're not looking at what I'm writing. Like you said, maybe they're looking, you know, at what I'm searching, you know, on the internet. So it's kind of scary that they just know everything about you like that. But
who's
pretty incredible.
Who's a Facebook spy in our chat that knows that Dennis loves stocks and they give him that information? But Brent pointed out, someone in the chat pointed out ARPU, average revenue per user.
Radio show or anything on stocks.
and the selling before guidance. I'm going to reserve comment here, 178 and a quarter. I would just say if you're long, look for that, you know, the pre-market high, you know, right before 929 and see if anybody comes in to take profits. I would have been taking profits probably at 166, which was a former all-time high. And actually, I was watching a trade just after, and I saw it pop up. And I'm like, in my head, I'm like, oh, man, look at that, 166. That's going to hold again. And then it had one brief dip under 166 and never looked back. So half and whole numbers if you're trying to get out of the position here in Facebook.
All right, 8:16, we're going to take our first break of the day and grab Mark Chaykin of Chaykin Analytics. So we'll be right back. All right, welcome back, everyone. I'm Spencer Israel here with Joel O'Connor and Dennis Dick. Today's show is brought to you by Chaykin Analytics, and we are now joined by the founder, Mark Chaykin. So we didn't get a chance to even discuss Twitter yet on the show, so why don't I give the number for you right now for the listeners who didn't see it yet. Q2 adjusted EPS, 8 cents versus a 5 cent estimate, sales of 573 versus $536 million. So they beat on the sales and they beat on the EPS, but the numbers just not really good enough. Mark, what first impression of this?
Well, the stock's down 10%, and the reason is that they had no user growth in the quarter, and ad revenues are down year over year. So they're clearly in a spiral where they can cut costs all they want to keep bottom line profits growing. But there is no growth in Twitter, which is shocking given how our president is drawing attention to Twitter every day and now his new communications director. And I think you have to contrast Twitter to what Facebook reported. Facebook is clearly the winner in the ad game, along with Google. And they're going in the right direction, taking on Snapchat very effectively. And Twitter's just going in the wrong direction in spite of the stories about potential takeover. This is a stock that you really don't want to bottom fish in.
And, you know, I was going to say, I actually read a quote it's from yesterday where you know, when Trump tweeted about the news yesterday morning at around 9, and I someone from the defense say, oh, we're taking orders from Twitter now. Twitter has such a big role to play in this administration. You would think of all times, you would think that now would be the time that Twitter is growing, and they can't even grow. But you still use Twitter, right, Mark? You like it as a company.
Oh, I do. We just did a live Twitter from the NASDAQ options floor at options expiration on Friday. They stream live. I mean, people are using it, but they're not paying for ads. You know, the ad community is not using Twitter as a vehicle to put up ads. So Twitter's just not generating revenue, whereas on Facebook and Google, they are. And that's, in essence, the game. Got to get the ad revenue to stay alive.
All right. What other stocks are on your radar? There's a lot of earnings today, yesterday, this morning, today after the bell. What other stocks are on your radar?
Well, Comcast reported better than expected earnings before the opening. That's doing well. After the bell, we're looking at Starbucks, which was my bearish stock of the week 2 weeks ago. The stock is in the restaurant group, which is just suffering badly, except for a spotty name here or there. And I expect a negative earnings surprise there. And then we also have Amazon reporting after the close. And I guess other than Apple, Amazon is the most watched stock as everybody's hoping for growth in the cloud business. And as they try and take over various segments of the retail space, see if they can put some numbers on the board. But I think it's going to be very volatile all day, and we'll see what those earnings are. And then finally, Southwest Air. We had two negative reports that preceded Southwest Air's, Delta and United Continental. Both those stocks are down between 10 and 14% after the earnings, which came out roughly a week to 2 weeks ago. So my expectation is Southwest Air is going to have a tough time bucking the trend, and there's been very little tolerance for negative earnings prices. The stocks are getting punished when they report disappointing earnings.
I want to go back to Starbucks for a second. So why are you expecting a negative earnings report out of Starbucks? They did actually come out this morning and make a deal to buy the remaining shares of a Chinese company. They're going to operate all Starbucks stores in mainland China for about $1.3 billion in cash. But what is it about Starbucks that you're expecting bad quarter?
Well, they just have hit a wall in terms of growth here in the U.S., and there's the price-conscious consumer out there. You know, we know the consumer has built up big cash reserves, but I think they're just not spending it in places like Starbucks. And the fact that they announced an acquisition ahead of this afternoon's earnings report that this is sort of a smokescreen to draw attention away from what may be a miserable quarter. Now, it's not going to fall apart like some of these stocks that have just totally tanked. But as I said, the market has zero tolerance for a company that either misses estimates or gives a downbeat guidance comments after earnings. So I felt when Starbucks was around 59 that this was a good stock to avoid ahead of the earnings report. That's working out well. We'll see what happens.
All right, Mark, got to ask you about these semis, NVIDIA and AMD. Do you watch these guys?
Oh, yeah. We're a favorite in our power gauge rating to Micron Applied Materials and Lam Research. And, of course, NVIDIA is just off the charts from a valuation point of view, so we have a neutral rating there. But Lam Research reported after the close last night, I think it's the 20th quarter in a row, positive earnings surprise. They guided higher. The stock was very volatile after market, down 3%, down 4%, finished up 2%. It's making a new high, but here's what I think from a trader's point of view, these earnings reports and the spikes are an opportunity to sell the stocks. Much as we love these stocks and our power gauge rating, our 20-factor fundamental model is bullish, look at the action in Micron. Better than expected earnings about a month ago. The stock has really attracted sellers on every rally. So as good as the earnings are right now, I think there's an opportunity to sell these stocks on spikes after earnings. So sometimes you can get too much of a good thing, and that's an opportunity for traders and investors to take money off the table.
All right, Mark, you're hosting a webinar today at 4:15 about the ultimate stock checklist and the best small cap stocks to buy today. Give us a little bit of a preview of that. How do you determine what makes a good small cap stock?
Well, I look for a small cap stock that has a bullish power gauge rating, and then I filter it down further to find small cap stocks where insiders are buying and where there's a history of positive earnings surprises, because small cap stocks tend to be underowned and underfollowed by Wall Street analysts. So if you get a positive earnings surprise in a small cap semiconductor stock, for instance, one or two new analysts may start to pay attention and cover the stock, and you usually get latent buying that plays out over the next 5 to 10 trading sessions. So it often, when a small cap stock outperforms Wall Street estimates, it's not that big spike and then consolidation. It just sort of builds over a few days. So we use Chaikin Analytics. We're going to speak to a very disciplined methodology. We have an earnings calendar. And the important thing about the earnings calendar is knowing whether the stock has a bullish or a bearish rating, because bearish rated stocks are twice as likely to report a negative earnings surprise. Seagate was an example of that earlier in the week. Bearish rating, disappointed, spiked down 20%. You just want to be out of these stocks or own some sort of put position to take advantage of them. And we're going to be talking about that. We're also going to be talking about how you can use our analytics in a bear market. And although we're not yet bearish, we're still maintaining a positive outlook. As night follows day, we're going to get a correction. It's been over a year since we've had a 5% correction. And we're going to talk very specifically about what you do to make money in a bear market. It's nice to protect assets, but bear markets present real opportunity. And we're going to speak to that as well.
Last question, Mark, and then we'll let you get out of here. But what's been your overall reaction to earnings season at least so far? We're only 2 or 3 weeks in, but what have you observed so far?
Well, earnings season has been a real positive. Multinational companies that are benefiting from a weak dollar, like Caterpillar and Boeing and McDonald's, have reported blowout numbers. They've spiked up. Any company that disappoints has been punished, and even companies that meet estimates are attracting sellers. So I think in general, earnings season has fulfilled what we expected, which was very, very positive numbers on both the top line and the bottom line. But it's really the reaction to earnings season that investors and traders have to focus on. Right now, I'd say it's a good earnings season for the multinationals because the weak dollar is really putting the wind at their back. But in general, you're getting good earnings from tech, and they're following through, but I think they're saleable. The financials are coming through with good earnings, but they're not really attracting buyers. They're attracting sellers. So if you look at the action of Bank of America, Citicorp, and JP Morgan, good numbers from all three of those companies, but Wall Street is keying more on what the Fed is saying, and they're using the good numbers as an excuse to take profits.
All right, we've been on with Mark Chaikin. He is the founder of Chaikin Analytics. For more information on that platform, go to ChaikinAnalytics.com at ChaikinAnalytics.com. You can also check out Mark's webinar today, like we mentioned, at 4:15 on the best small cap stocks to buy today. I'm putting the link in the chat right now, and to find that, just go to ChaikinAnalytics.com/webinars. Mark, thank you so much for stopping by today, and we'll be in touch.
Always a pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Good information there from Mark Chaikin of Chaikin Analytics. We are still up 5 points at 78 and a quarter, holding above mid-range on the session. Mark went into the Twitter report a little bit here. Dennis Savestar, I was watching this one with Brent yesterday, yeah. And I'm like, man, some people are peeling out of this ahead of the report.
Yeah.
What did they like about that report, Spencer?
I think Mark had it right, that the users, are down advertising. I mean, what was really to like about it, really? Like you're saying, they can cut some bottom line expense or top line or some expenses there, but to get the bottom line better. But, I mean, there was nothing really jumping out at you and saying, well, look at the growth or look at what they're doing with ads or I don't know. I just didn't think that they did anything good really in it.
So the end of the quarter, Twitter did with 328 million monthly active users. 329 million was what was expected. So they actually missed the estimate on that, and I think that's what really, really – the fact that they missed it and the fact that it was unchanged quarter over quarter.
It's just not growing.
Right, exactly.
It's been the same issue for years here now, I feel like. We've been talking about Twitter. It hasn't been growing. It's priced like a growth stock that doesn't grow. So that's been my issue. I mean, I liked it down at 14. I liked it a couple times. I played it a couple times down there. But it starts getting up over 20 bucks. It starts to get expensive. I mean, you get back down that 14 area, maybe you start to think, okay, stock is relatively cheap again. The only thing being said, you can use your 50% retracement here, Joel. And, it might come into play here actually today. Quick math, 14 up to almost 21. So we'll call it 7 bucks. Lose 3.5 from 21. Look where we're at, 17.66, 17.5. We're right there fooling around at the 50% retracement. It might be a trade there just off the 50%.
Yeah, I'm going to let it shake out here. The other thing that I really like when you mentioned the 50% retracements, I mean, they're a good number, right? But it's nothing that, the accuracy of it. But when you see it surrounding a series of lows, then I think it adds a lot of significance. And I'll just give you three lows back at the end of June, early July, at the 1740 area. Pre-market low, 1760. So I'm going to see what happens here, because there's going to be selling.
What's the pre-market low right now? We're right there?
Yeah, 1761 is the pre-market low, 1740 area. 61, Dennis, but we're like 61.65. So don't get too excited here buying the open. I think
You don't want to buy the whole float at 1745.
Just go your usual size 10,000 and see what happens. But and we're gonna ring up Sean maybe tomorrow or Monday and get his.
Can we get him today? No, he'll be sleeping.
We don't have time today. Dennis.
We don't have time. Spencer's like, come on, let's get going here. Too much talking on the same stock. We got 271 stocks to cover. Give us a kick in the butt.
Well, where would you like to go? There's so many. Where would you like to go?
I like 1750 and Schroeder. I just want to say that. Let's go over to these drug stocks here. Gilead and Celgene, both of these stocks up big here this morning. Well, you know, pretty big. Gilead's having a big boost anyways. I like it because I've loaned both of these in my investment portfolio. GILD now 75.60 here. Did get up over 76. Give us the numbers quickly for Gilead and Celgene. We'll do them together.
All right, Gilead is $2.56 versus a $2.15 estimate.
That makes money.
That's good. Sales of $7.141 billion versus a $6.35 billion estimate. So beat it on the top, beat on the bottom for Gilead. I guess I'll just do Celgene while I'm here. Celgene reported this morning Q2 adjusted EPS of $1.82 versus $1.78. Sales of $3.27 versus $3.23 billion. So again, a beat on the top and a beat on the bottom. Their fiscal year EPS coming in line with the estimate.
Both these stocks trading higher here. Celgene approaching all-time highs. We know Gilead significantly off because obviously it hasn't come even close to the 120 that it traded back in 2015. Growth has been an issue there. But Celgene here could actually make a new all-time high here today. Joel, 140.72, the old high. We are just a buck away from there. Do you think we're going to get an all-time high in Celgene?
Yes.
I think so too.
140.
Drugs are hot today too. There's
yeah,
a lot going
I'm
on
just
going
to give you the.
Dennis,
you,
your ash was up.
Yeah, 140.75. That marks your pre-market high. We're backed off a buck off that, but what's a buck stock like this? Dennis mentioned the all-time high as a potential target. 140.72. So there is your level coinciding with the pre-market high. And then Gilead, I see you got the print up in the 76 handle. Really not much there. I'd say 77 is a little bit more resistant if we keep going in the rally mode. 76, yeah. 98. I mean, not a great number, not a like 4 or 5 or 6 star number. But it was a high back in January. That's actually the yearly high. There's a nice level to keep an eye on. 76, 98 yearly high for Gilead.
I think Gilead could give some of this back. I own in my invest portfolio, so I'm talking against my book again. I must be the only person on the air that talks against their book all the time, but I've had Gilead in there for a while. I'm probably going to stick with it, but I am concerned that it could give some of this back. It's been a hell of a run, 64 to 75 in basically a month for this big stock that everybody hated a month ago, and now they're all starting to love. When everybody starts to love it, I start to hate it. So I don't know, Gilead. I think I'd fade this one. But I'm not going to because I own in my investment portfolio. Jumping back over to Buffalo Wild Wings. Earnings not wild here. We know Chipotle got the beats yesterday. I'll pat myself on the back on that one because I was saying the pop was going to be the fade. I predicted it, and it actually worked out that way. So it's rarely that I get it almost perfect. Anyways, I made a little bit of money on CMG. Should have maybe stuck with it a little longer. I know we had a couple traders in our chat that were making money off it, so good job, guys. Buffalo Wild Wings, though, earnings here. Stock breaking down again. This is now very significantly off its all-time high. This hit 205 back in September of 2015. It's almost been cut in half now. We're trading at 112, down 10 points here this morning. Give us the numbers for Buffalo Wild Wings because they obviously weren't very wild.
Yeah, we'll do this quick and then we'll get to our next guest. But Q2 yep. adjusted EPS, this is bad. 66 cents versus $1.05 estimate.
Oh.
Sales of 500 versus $513 million. They missed that as well. Fiscal year comes down 1.2%. Q2 comes down 1.2% as well.
Everything bad. I've ate there a couple times last quarter. Obviously, my couple meals didn't help. Let's go to our next guest.
All right. Joel's not even going to give me the levels.
Who needs me? Spencer.
Give me one number.
Sponsored by Spencer and Dennis.
One number. You got 2 seconds. Go.
110. I think that pre-market low is a little overdone at 108.20. Okay. 110 was a monthly low back in October 2013.
All right, let's go grab our next guest, Peter Chur, Managing Director and Head of Macro Strategy at Breen Capital. We'll be right back with Peter.
Welcome back, traders and investors, to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep, brought to you by Benzinga Pro. I'm your co-host, Joel L. Condon, along with Dennis Dick, Spencer Israel working the boards, and we have Peter Chur on the line, Managing Director and Head of Macro Strategy at Breen Capital. Peter, how you doing on this Thursday morning?
Not bad at all. I guess, like everyone else, probably waiting for Amazon tonight.
Yeah, exactly. The next big earnings report, the next big earnings beat, or should I say. But before we go into the earnings season and the Fed here, you made a real interesting point in that about market structure. And we try and mix the show up with market structure talk, stock talk. Your interesting comment. Could you elaborate on that?
Yeah. You know, one term that I've been using is calling it, you know, faux or fake liquidity. And you're kind of seeing it across markets. Clearly, it's in the equities and it's in the, you know, fixed income markets and the treasuries. And what I mean by that is at any given price point, all these algos are around trying to scalp a little bit of money. So it appears liquid, but gap to the next price point. So if anyone has the real size, so do you get these, you know, kind of air pocket moves? And I think we're seeing that fairly frequently. And I don't think that's a healthy environment to trade in.
You know what, Peter? Dennis Dick here, and obviously I do a lot of talks on market structure, and I follow this very closely with the CFA Institute. And I tend to agree with you here. I think it's a combination of a lot of factors, and I'd like to get your thoughts on this as well. Something I've called for a long time is homogenous liquidity, and what that basically means is that our liquidity providers are all the same types of market participants now. You know, you look at the floor, you know, and if you go back to 20 years ago, and Joel would know this being a floor trader, he had all kinds of different, you know, people providing liquidity at locals. You had a lot of institutional order flow on the books as well, and now the institutions, you know, using algos, they're not sticking their orders out there, so can't absorb that sudden demand. And what we're really left with, I mean, high frequency traders are providing some liquidity, but like you said, you know, it is fleeting liquidity, and when the going gets tough, they will, you know, they can potentially, you know, turn off their machines, and we've seen that before too, where you get left with nothing. The problem is that's kind of all we got now, because, you know, we don't have any human beings anymore. I mean, my firm, Bright Trading, and I could just talk, you know, about our firm a little bit here. We, you know, provide a lot of liquidity to the market over the years. And because what we find now is that, you know, our limit orders are always getting hopped. There's always, you know, other people joining us. We find that our limit orders are only getting filled when it's moving against us. So we find a very, you know, that we're very disadvantaged by just passively putting our orders out there. So we do more taking liquidity, or we do more of just, you know, not showing our hand, not sticking our orders out there where other participants are going to leapfrog us or use those orders against us. So you lose firms like us provide liquidity as well. So really what you're left with is, you know, a couple, you know, maybe a couple dozen firms or maybe five or six main ones providing the majority of your market's liquidity, and they're all high frequency trading firms. And yeah, that's the problem, because the liquidity just is very homogenous now, meaning that if they all press the off button at the same time as these five, six firms, we're left with nothing.
Yeah, no, I agree. And we see the same thing really in the treasury market. You know, that's more at an institutional level, but again, same idea. You know, probably the best analogy that I see is, you know, if you're ever snorkeling and you see like a school of minnows, they kind of all congregate, you stick your hand, they disappear, and then you look 2 seconds later, they've recongregated somewhere else. That's the type of liquidity I think we have, is this, it's very fleeting. There's the perception that it's real, but I don't know how well it'll be tested. And then for me, when you add in further to this market structure, you've got this whole evolution of these VIX-related ETFs. No one's quite sure. You know, they've never really existed in this size before. Then you have all these, you know, low vol and min vol type smart beta products. It's just very unclear to me how these will all interconnect. And especially so much of the algo trading that we see is, okay, someone puts in an order for, you know, a REIT, which triggers a buy in that, which then triggers a sell in the ETF, which triggers a buy in some of the others. So it's all very interconnected.
Yes.
And it hasn't been tested. And the last time I think it was really tested was August 2015, and it was a bit of a disaster.
Yeah. Oh, August 24th, obviously, was a major disaster there. And I mean, there's a lot of little holes in the market structure. Some people will say, you know, the structure's never been better. You know, I've obviously argued differently, you know, and we've adjusted. Our firm has adjusted. And like I said, we've moved from providing liquidity to taking liquidity just because, you know, that we feel like we're disadvantaged in that way. But, you know, the interconnectedness that you're talking about, I see all the time. I mean, 100 shares is, I've had a, you know, a trader in my firm saying, you know, bidding 100 shares now is like bidding 1,000 back in the day, because you bid 100 shares for something and then there's a whole pile of algos that join you. So, you know, somebody bids 1,000 shares, like bidding 10,000 shares now out there. So, you know, 100 shares, 200 shares is very influential in this market anymore. Unless you're trading a big stock like Bank of America, it doesn't matter. But on some of the smaller caps, I mean, 100 share bid moves this price. So it's so difficult. Like, I can't imagine being an institution. Here I am, I'm trying to buy 100 shares or a couple hundred shares or something. I show my hand and this price starts popping against me because I showed I'm going to buy 100 shares. So I'm going to buy, you know, $2,500 worth of this $25 stock. All of a sudden the price starts taking off. It's ridiculous. It just shows you how hard it is. It is, and if you're an institution trying to figure out, okay, well, I'm little, you know, if I'm a retail trader, I'm buying 100 shares, and it's difficult for me. What about that retail trader that's got to buy a million? He's not touching a small cap stock because there's no way he's ever going to be able to get in and out of that thing if he thinks he's got 10% alpha, you know, to be able to take out of that stock. How in the heck will he get that position on to be able to extract that alpha? It's going to be 10% of price impact before he even knows it.
We're on the line with Peter Chur, Managing Director and Head of Macro Strategy at Breen Capital. Peter, I mean, we could talk about the market structure and, you know, possible effects, possible downside in the market. But right now, I mean, it's just a lot of complacency in the market. How do you gauge your portfolio? How do you hedge yourself against these kind of events? Or is it just very expensive to do and not worthwhile?
Yeah, I think you have to be very careful. What we've been working with some of our clients is, I think my base case right now is that we probably, you know, bounce around, maybe continue to grind higher in terms of, you know, stock prices. But I do think you want to kind of protect yourself against some of these, you know, bigger risks. So whether you buy some deep out-of-the-money options, whether you buy some call spreads on VXX or some of these VIX-related products, I think those are cheap ways that you can kind of create a lottery ticket type profile. Because I do think we're kind of very this narrow kind of stable band, which is getting priced in, you know, by VIX and other things. I think if we break through that, it will break very quickly and very ugly. So you can afford to buy some really out-of-the-money options as your hedge. In the meantime, I think you also have to be watching the biggest risk I see to the market on a day-in, day-out basis is rising Treasury yields. Because we've seen, and we certainly saw through much of June, whenever Treasury yields rose, it put pressure on the FANG stocks, dragging markets down. So I think that's something you know, people have to be well aware of is Treasury yields and their impact on the FANG stocks, which has not been positive lately.
And real quick here in the chat, you did a Forbes article and someone met on the VIX versus the SVXY or XIV. They found it very informative. Could you just touch on that?
Yeah, so I find these VIX-related products, you know, completely fascinating for a multitude of reasons. But there are long VIX products, so VXX is probably the biggest long VIX, and UVXY is a levered long VIX. And then you have XIV and SVXY, which are short VIX products. So those, if you look at the charts, they've done phenomenally well because they're consistently selling volatility, and volatility has been shrinking. And because of how these ETFs work with futures, you get this huge roll advantage that they're constantly rolling, and you kind of roll down this curve, so it's been performing very well. The concern I have is in XIV in particular, so it's an inverse ETN, it's issued by Credit Suisse. If VIX, the index it references, moves by 80% in a day, that fund has to terminate. And I think that's a risk that not a lot of people are focused on. And again, I think it's pretty unrealistic when VIX was at 11 or 12 that you can get that sort of move. But as VIX declines and gets lower and lower, I think that risk increases. I saw Morgan Stanley did a report the other day showing that as a percentage change, VIX does move much more from a lower base. And that's partly because VIX was never designed to be treated as a percentage change. One VIX point really translates into something different when you look at it kind of from an options trading standpoint. To make these ETFs, they turned it into a percentage change. And so I think that gets it's going to make those ETFs very volatile and does set you up for this sort of trade where if, you know, volatility rises, you could see a lot of people getting stopped out of those trades and pushing VIX far higher than it should be on a fundamental basis. And that would drag stocks down as well.
A lot of that interconnectedness you're talking about there again, I mean, you can even jump into the triple levered ETFs. We're seeing these all the time. They were talking about bringing out the quadruple levered ETFs. Quick thoughts on these products there, Peter.
You know, I see no reason for the levered ETFs. I'm generally a fan of ETFs. I think there's a lot of good in the ETFs. I look at these levered products, and I really kind of banged my head against the wall when I saw that the SEC was considering four times levered ETFs because they're path-dependent, which means that the returns fluctuate given how the markets move. There's a huge kind of cost in terms of the daily rebalancing. They also upset, I think, the markets, again, because they have to rebalance at the close each day, so they tend to buy more on up days and sell more on down days, amplifying moves. I just think it's a very bad structure. And as an investor, you know, either you have the wherewithal to have a margin account or ways to play this without having to embed this kind of really funky internal leverage to me. So I'm not a fan, and I was really disappointed when the SEC kind of gave approval to 4x levered deals. It makes no sense to me.
Peter, before we let you go, I just want to get some comments on the Fed. I mean, old school conventional thinking, you know, the market is a good alternative when, you know, rates are continuing to go low to historically low levels. But now, I mean, the Fed interest rates are starting to go up. I'm getting a kind of mixed signals out of Yellen here. But, I mean, markets at historically low rates, going up just a little bit. Just give us your comments on the Fed and the potential effect on the market.
I think the Fed is going to be very cautious. They don't want to upset markets. It seems clear that every time they spook the market, they retract and pull back and are very accommodative. So for me, the big question is when they stop reinvesting some of their QE proceeds. So as bonds have been redeeming, they've been, you know, fully reinvesting that, they're going to cut back on that reinvestment. And that's where I think you could see some pressure on the longer end of the yield curve. And that's why I watch, you know, the 10-year and the 30-year bond so closely. And if that does start putting pressure on it, that's when I think you could see some problems for the equity markets. I think a rate hike or two is minimal. And I think if they control how they do this, cut back on reinvestment, treasuries will be fine, equities can be fine. If they lose control of that long end of the bond curve at all, that's when trouble comes for the market. So I just watch that very closely. Right now, I think they're going to be cautious. They're not going to spook markets, but it's something to watch out for.
Peter Chur, Managing Director and Head of Macro Strategy at Breen Capital, talking on market structure, the Fed. Unbelievable interview, Peter. Thank you, and we're going to get you back on again soon.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Peter.
S&P futures hanging up 5 points here, 78.25. Dennis, you might have loved that, the ETF and the VIX talk. But
yeah, I agree with everything that you just said. I mean, that minnow analogy on the liquidity is just a fabulous analogy. I completely agree with that. I mean, when you go to get, you know, you go to hit the bids or you get significant there, any significant bids, all of a sudden, you know, they all move on you. You only get a piece of it. I mean, and it's got to be really struggle for an institutional trader to try to transact in this market. And that's why a lot of them are going off exchange, or they're going other places to look for it. And I mean, the liquidity is fleeting. There is no doubt about it. So a lot different than it used to be. Like we always say, you know, back in the day, the bids were real. And when you saw 20,000 shares bid there, you could hit them. They could count down, you know, 18, 19, 18, 17, 16, 15. And you knew, okay, well, I'm, you know, at 15,000 in line. Okay, well, 15,000 shares trade here, I'm going to be filled. Now, you know, as all these exchanges, you know, you can be bid there and be right in your queue. And, you know, it could trade there again and again and again, and you never get filled. So it's a completely, there's a lot of holes in this market structure. I mean, people who say that it's better than it ever was before, definitely not the floor trader saying it. And you can say, okay, well, you're just, you know, washed up floor trader and you don't adjust to the new technology, the new environment. The technology fails. I mean, at certain points in time, when you get these flash crashes that happen, it's because of, you know, just, you know, too few participants providing the majority of our liquidity, and they're all fleeting. So completely agree with everything Peter said.
All right, let's move on to the earnings parade. We had some numbers out of Verizon.
VZ, so following AT&T's suit, I guess if you're playing the synergies here or the sympathy play here, you were making some money here. VZ, big pop. Spencer, give us the details.
My laptop just froze up, so I can't get your numbers.
Right,
sorry. I was looking at Twitter, trying to stay on top of my news.
Let me go get my Benzinga Pro. I'll bring it up really fast because my laptop, which I don't have a laptop, frees up. It's my main computer. 96.96 in line, $30.5 billion versus $29.91 billion. Again, this is the story of this is good enough. When your stock has been going straight down into earnings, and really it has over the course of the last 3 months, Verizon was a $50 stock, closed, you know, 44. So it's lost basically 12% over the last quarter. You don't have to blow it away to go higher. You just got to kind of come in line and meet it. And that's what it did. So it was good enough, this earnings report, and that's why the stock is up 3% this morning.
45.90 is currently where we're trading, and that's close to the pre-market high of 45.95, and not backing off. I mean, I see a couple highs here at 46. I see one at 45.98. That was back on June 26th. Another one right at 46.02. I mean, so you want to think, yeah, up a buck and a half. That's resistance. The thing is, though, it's not really backing off, right? So still finding buyers here. big decline. AT&T, that had to be one of its best individual day moves, I mean, probably since the financial crisis when you had a lot of volatility here. Man, buying those things on the way down, I see, you know, continued upside. Even though AT&T, if you're trading that, I see 3-4 highs right in the 38 and a quarter area. And how are we trading? We're trading up a dime at 38.13. So nice. If you were buying this thing on the decline, you're getting a little principal appreciation along with that juicy dividend.
Big time juicy dividend. So, and you know, I own AT&T in my investment portfolio. I haven't put Verizon in there yet. I still talk about it. Maybe if bulls back, I will. But you know, you gotta consider that. And I mean, this things were beat up. The dividends are juicy. There was people ready, you know, and ready to strike. And it was a good report, so they're striking here. I don't know if I'd be chasing up $2 after it's been so out of favor. But on pullbacks now, I think you're gonna find buyers. Where do you want to go? We got Procter Gamble. We got, you know, Southwest. We got PayPal from last night. I mean, how many places to go here? Want to go PG?
Sure.
Procter Gamble, Spencer, is your computer not frozen up, or do you need me to go to the pro?
I got my PG right here. Procter Gamble reported this morning, actually, Q4 core EPS of 85 cents versus a 78 cent estimate, sales of 16.1 versus $16.02 billion. They see their core EPS growth year over year at 5 to 7%.
Big pop here for PG. Taking out the 90 resistance, I got to go to the book. I just got to see what is in the book at 90, if there's anything there, if we can still see that level. Yeah, you know, there's some stock there. Thing is, it's trade 198,000 shares, though, so it's probably going to chew anything that's in the book. It's up a 91 and a quarter here. It's a big pop for PG. I like the numbers. You know, I like the fact it's going higher here. I still like the dividend on PG, but there's some major resistance up here.
Yeah, 91.68, that is your pre-market high. And looked off a little bit, made a couple pokes at it. Still trading up, but you can see here that you had that big run up to 92. That was back in March, but then it was flanked by several highs, 91.75, 91.82. So if, in fact, you could take out that pre-market high, I'd find additional sellers from 91.5 to 92. Coming back on the downside here, man, oh man, a lot of air here. You got a long ways to go to get to the bottom of the top of yesterday's range at 89.42. So resistance a little bit easier to pick out here in Procter and Gamble. Downward Dog wants us to take a look at Love, Southwest Airlines. How did they do?
Yep, Love reported there as well. There, let me get you that Q2 adjusted EPS of $1.24. It's a 4 cent beat. 5.7 versus $5.72 billion. So a slight miss on the sales and a slight beat on the...
Not good enough. It's got to blow it away on both ends because, again, this has been running up in the report. You can say, oh, no, well, look, it's down $4 in the last month. But in the last quarter, it's went from 50 to 65. So it's still, you know, pretty, you know, been up. And we also saw way better numbers come from, what was it? Was it UAL? I'm trying to think of last week. I think it was UAL or was it Delta? One of the airlines reported... Was it Delta?
Yep.
It was Delta. And those were good numbers. And the stock was trading up in the pre-market. There were way better numbers. And the stock turned around and went hard red. And that was telling you, with those Delta numbers being as good as they were, Love was really going to need to blow it away. They miss on revenue. It's not good enough. That's why stocks...
All right. You got an initial spike here after the pre-market trading. Let's take a look. You got it under 57.50. Your pre-market low in Love is at 57.20, getting a little bit of a bounce back up. Let's see here. Yesterday's range, are you going to get a shot to get yesterday's range? You had an old double bottom at 58.55, 58.74. That will now be your resistance. See if you can get back over that into the 59 handle. Coming back on the downside, that was a quick spike to 57.20. On the daily, see a pair of lows just above that, the 57.50 area. And an exact low at 57.24 on May 15th.
While we're sticking with the airlines theme, we did get Spirit Airlines as well, SAVE. Unlike Love and the other ones, this one actually was pretty weak coming into the report. This thing has actually down on the quarter, which is crazy considering how strong the airlines have been. Give us the numbers here for SAVE, SAVE, yeah, one of the best.
I'll be flying Spirit in a few weeks, and I'm not looking forward to it, but Q2 adjusted EPS is $1.14. That's a 4-cent beat. Sales of $701.7 versus $702.3 million, so a slight miss on the sales and a slight beat on the EPS, sort of as love.
Can't be missing on the revenues here, even though the stock's been trending down in the earnings. But it is down another $2 here. I'm wondering if we're not going to find some buyers here eventually. The stock has been straight down for a while here. Joel, do you got a level down here?
Still open. Yeah, I mean, weird day yesterday. Bounced off 47.65, the close near the high of the session. So people are trapped off that closing print. Former low of the move was 48.29. Dennis, is there any kind of size associated with this? Is it just odd lots traded?
1,400 shares only have traded, but it is offered down. So, you know, one thing you can say, oh, it's 1,400 shares. But there's 1,800 offered, 46.75, and nobody's jumping in to buy those. So it's telling me that it actually wants to be down here. Like when you see something go offer, and if it's out to lunch, it'll get scooped up right away. So that offer is not out to lunch. That's telling you it wants to be in the 46 handle. Will it stay down there? I don't know. You know, this is a thin stock. It's one that's been going down. I think you will find some buyers in this eventually, but it's actually one of the out-of-favor airlines, and they just missed on revenues, so it's not going to put it back in favor.
If you're waiting for that November low from last year, 46.80, that's your opportunity. Offered there, big gap in the charts from your monthly low all the way down to the 41.42 area. But we'll see what happens, see if we can take out that offer coming back on the upside. Just an ugly-looking chart, so people that didn't get out ahead of the report may try on a rally.
Just quickly in balance look here before we let you go. Twitter, 238,000 to sell, continues to leak in the pre-market. I like that area of time, but it's 1750, 1745 area. We are right there right now, trading 1753. So that's an area that's coming into some major support here, and that'll be around the 50% retracement as well. So kind of do like that number, maybe for a technical bounce. Have to see how it responds at 930 when the real liquidity and the real institutions come in. 128,000 to buy. Look at the buy imbalance in General Electric. That's wacky world. BABA, its normal buy imbalance of 40,000 shares. It's trading up $2 here in the pre-market. Square SQ, 139,000 to buy. It's kind of jumping out at me. We did have good numbers from PayPal. That often does help out Square. PayPal trading up $1.95 in the pre-market, taking out the $60 resistance. I sold that stock to my invest portfolio back at 40. That was a wrong move. It is now 60. So PayPal continues to move higher here in the pre-market.
All right, 8:59. Actually, what we're going to do is we're going to hang out for another 15-minute segment with just Joel and myself. Yeah, spontaneous decision right here. We got so many earnings to get to. We might as well just stay on with you a little bit longer. So, Dennis, we're going to let you go, and Joel and I are going to move over to some other stocks. And one thing I wanted to bring up, Joel, is New York Times reported this morning. They just reported, the New York Times did, their best non-Q4 quarterly revenue since 2013. So obviously Q4 was when people renew their annual subscriptions, a lot of them at least, so that's when they generally have high revenue. But the New York Times just got the Trumpist bumps of Trump bumps. They thanks to, of course, to the administration and all the news coming from it, they just delivered, I guess I'll read the numbers for you right now, but it was their best quarterly revenue outside of a Q4 in 4 years. Q2 adjusted EPS for NYT, 18 cents versus a 14 cent estimate. Sales of $407.074 million, a $393.9 million estimate. Total subscriber sales are up at a similar rate as they were in Q2. They see ad sales down in the mid to high single digits. I wanted to bring that up because I thought that was pretty interesting. Joel, what are you seeing?
All right, let's take a look at the New York Times. Definitely benefited from the election here. Let's take a look at the pre-market trading. Got a print at 19 here. We're going to have to go to the longer-term charts. Let's go to a weekly. Nothing there. Let's go to a monthly. Maybe 20? Can you see 20 here? I see Just over the $20 level. Looks like back in 08, 09 here. So if you've been sitting on this one for a while, maybe get a chance to sell it at 20. So we are going to do a switch quick change of platforms here for our extended segment. And we are going to switch station here. And I want to get some tickers in the chat here. If we don't get some tickers off the hop here, Spencer, we can continue our analysis with some of the earnings.
Well, let's give the PayPal number, since we didn't actually give PayPal numbers on the show. Q2 adjusted EPS. Fourth, it's a 3 cent beat, sales of 3.136 versus a $3.09 billion estimate. So a beat there for PayPal on the EPS and a beat on the sales. Their Q3 EPS guidance coming in line with the estimate. Q3 sales guidance coming in slightly higher, and the fiscal year guidance as well on both sales and the EPS.
All right, so taking a look at PayPal here. Nice move in the after hours trading. Got up over 61. 61.11, that is your high here for PayPal. Not too far off that level, 60.69 currently trading. So if you're looking for a target on the upside, let's use that pre-market high of 61.69. Looking at this from the daily charts, man, this is former all-time high was 59.38. So if you're looking for a little bit of a gap, maybe come down to the 59.50 area. But impressive run, gap and go from the last earnings report. Continued strength for PayPal.
All right, no, I don't see any stickers in the chat, so let's just keep going down my list, which I got Dunkin' Brands next. DNKN reported this morning, Q2 adjusted EPS was a 2 cent beat, sales of 218.5 versus a $220.9 million estimate, so they missed the sales number by a little bit. They see U.S. comps growth at about or hair under 1%, and Baskin-Robbins U.S. comps are down about 1%, so I guess people don't like their Baskin Robbins anymore.
And here we have it trading up $1.15. Had some pretty good pre-market action. Let's see, 53.67. Let's see your pre-market high. You did trade into the 51 handle. Let's see if you can battle back up in this thing. We are trading up $1.15, but highs here just under 54. I'm looking here, basis the daily charts. We can show you here, switch over to the daily. You have one, two, three highs, actually more than that based on the daily. One, two, three, four, five highs between 53.69 and 53.82. Can get through that level for a continued rally. Coming back on the downside if it reverses course, 51.93 was your low on July 19th.
All right, we got Wave Trader in the chat talking about Dow. So let's get to Dow Chemical. Q2 operating EPS of $1.08 versus a $1.08 versus $13.61 billion. So a beat on the sales and a beat on the EPS.
All right, let's take a look at Dow here. Pre-market trading up 58 cents here at 67 even. So seeing they like the report. Let's see what's yesterday. Actually get through that level in Dow Chemical. We'll switch real quick to our daily charts, and we will see the high of the move. The recent high of the move has been at 67.50. Haven't quite hit that in the pre-market. See if we can take that level out for continued rally. Coming back on the downside, I see two lows, 587. Actually, three lows, 587, 598, 66.06. So 66, 67.5. Those are your levels for Dow Chemical.
All right, UPS Q2 EPS $1.58 versus $1.47, 7.75 bill versus 15.5. They also reaffirmed their fiscal year adjusted EPS outlook.
All right, looking at the ooh, someone got real carried away in this one and really liked the report. Took it up all the way to 115.80 and then big reverting down now, trading on the lows of the pre-market session, not really bouncing. Money would be offered there at 111.40. So big reversal here. Let's go to the daily chart to see if we can find some support here in shares of UPS. I don't know. Let's see. 110 area. double bottom, 110.14, 110.18. See if you can find some buyers there. And boy, it was really struggling to fill that gap. That was probably from the last earnings report. But now it looks like they're going to test that support at the 110 area.
We got Jag wanting to know about level. And they did report yesterday after the bell. I just saw that Q2 adjusted EPS of $1.08. First, an 88-cent estimate, so a nice 20-cent beat there on the Q2 EPS. Sales of $842. First, $840 million. They did also come in with some Q3 guidance that was in line with the estimate. The sales fiscal year guidance, they did raise the EPS guidance for the fiscal year. So,
Big bar there. If you were looking for some active trading, they hit it all the way down to 113.08, rocketed it up over 121. But when you see this, what you like to do is go to your daily charts here on TradeStation, and you can see nicely here that several highs over 120, as recent as 120.36. That was your high on July 24th. The all-time high in the issue is just above that, 121.75. So still popped your head over 120 a few times, but it's really failed miserably. So if you want to look for a continue to break out, get over 120 and holding 120.
You get some levels, Joel, in FedEx. We did just at UPS. Let's get some FedEx.
FedEx, see how it's moving. In sympathy, we have in UPS. Let's go to the 15-minute chart here, and things look kind of sleepy here. That green line there represents a low from yesterday's session at 213.65. Let's go to the daily charts in FDX, and boom. Double 13.50, folks. We are below that by 40 cents. So now that will act as a little bit of resistance. Not a good-looking chart. I don't like the way it's coming off that high. Let's take a look. Oh, nothing major in this thing until you get to just under 71. That was your low on July 21st.
And Las Vegas Sands, I don't think we got to this one.
We did not.
Earlier, Q2 adjusted EPS of 73 cents versus a 59 cent estimate, sales of 3.14 versus a $3 billion estimate. So really, really good Q2 numbers there.
A little bit different than Wynn Resorts did yesterday. So let's first take a look at the pre-market trading. Big ranges here. Big top up 63.54, and someone said that is enough here up at that level. Now down on the session, so good numbers. The only thing I'm cautious on this one today, and I looked at the win numbers, weren't too bad, and they hit that stock hard. It is rebounding, but taking a look at Las Vegas Sands, don't think we're going to get back up and see that 63.50 print. Let's look at the daily charts in Las Vegas Sands, and you can see it's 63.42. So someone was eyeing that area during the after hours and pre-market sessions. Coming back on the downside, we could be in a little bit of trouble here if we cannot hold 61.30, and we are below that level right now. 61.30 was your July 18th open up. Closer to 60 bucks. Maybe we'll hit that round number today. Two lows flank 60 bucks from the 14th at 59.70 and the 17th at 60.38.
Let's go to one that has not reported yet. They report after the bell. Intel, INTC. What are you seeing leading up to this earnings report?
That slammed after its last report. It's battled its way all the way back here. For today, short-term trading ahead of the report. 35 could be your number, could have some institutional size there. 34.97, that was your high from yesterday. It was a 34.75 close. Fill the gap. I don't know if that, when we got hit, if that was like a downgrade, what took it into the lower 33 handle. If you do get slammed after the report, do keep an eye on that recent low of the move, 33.23. You also had some other lows. That area 33.50 back in December, 33 in November. So long-term support level 33.50, and looks like good resistance now at 35 ahead of the report.
How about Fiat Chrysler? Oh, you know what? Actually, I didn't see that number yet. I saw it's on my list, but I haven't seen the Fiat Chrysler number yet. Let's go with Nokia from Wave Trader.
Nokia just kind of been hanging out here. I do have it up trading 30 cents at 647. Keep in mind, this is an ADR. It's not your primary market. But for Nokia, I mean, you just want to keep an eye on all these highs above 650. One spike, 65, that can hold. Other highs in that area, 659, 654. So, yeah, if you could clear that recent high of the move at 665, continued upside, have a gap to fill just over $7. But here's an area where you failed at sometimes since late April. Hold that 650 and get up closer to that $7 area.
All right, 9:13. We've got a couple minutes left. Let's take a look at Altria MO. They reported this morning a Q2 adjusted EPS of 85 cents versus an 86 cent estimate. Sales, exercising taxes, excusing taxes, $4.366 billion on the sales number, and they missed on the EPS.
Street had it in the right way into this report. Boy, you got a not much trading action. You got a 70 bunch of lows here, just under 71.50. Currently trading at 71.31. That's, I mean, big sell off into the report. Looking at the daily charts, $70. Do you want to hold out for that? That's only $1.30 away. Look at the daily charts here, and you can see several times when we came off that. First time we came off that 76 high, found big buyers at 70 in April and May. Sold off again. I'm looking to see what we can do if we get down here. I mean, you call it the lows range from 69.79 up to 70.44, and that was about over 8-10 trading sessions.
Got one more. I actually want to hit RTN, which chalked this one up to obvious news. The EPS from continuing operations, $1.89 versus $1.76, $6.3 billion in sales versus $6.23 billion. They're also raising their outlook for the fiscal year. You know, it's a good time to be a defense company, Joel.
Yeah, I mean, this one I could honestly say you hit 171 even. That's pre-market high. Currently trading at 170.88, up $2. And then you look at the daily chart. This looks pretty here. As the former all-time highs made a couple days ago at 170.68. So there's a little, you know, what it looks like 171, there's a little bit of a seller there. But you know what? There's one thing that's going to keep me from shorting this thing, and that is Boeing. I mean, oh my God, look at the day that it had yesterday. Opened up several dollars higher, and actually, even if you were buying that opening print, you took 46 cents of worth of heat. It opened up over $10. 233.90. Up another two sticks here in the pre-market, 35.5. Can't say you're going to see that same price action in shares of RTN, but boy, great move in Boeing yesterday. Wave Trader popping in here. Let's take a look at that. Philip Morris. Do we have numbers on them as well?
I think so. Let me pull them up real quick. I was not prepared for that, but let's go. Philip Morris, they reported Thursday, last week they reported.
Oh, last week.
No.
Okay. Well, let's see how they've digested the daily charts. You are trading unchanged here at 117.65, and that's an important level for that to hold right off the opening bell. Yesterday's low, 17.50. Another low at 17.55, another one at 17.41. So unless this thing can get trading under 117, next stopping point, 116.17, coming back on the upside. Got a ways to go to get to yesterday's high at 118.51.
All right, that's about it for us today. We went a little late, 9:16, but that is okay. Hope you enjoyed. Remind everyone that today's show is brought to you by Chicken Analytics, winner of the 2017 Benzinga FinTech Award for Best Trading Idea Platform, Tool, or App. The centerpiece of the Chicken Analytics platform is the Chicken Power Gauge, a stock rating that gives you a directional edge using a proven algorithm that uniquely combines fundamental data with technical factors and distills all that data into a simple rating so you can make smarter investment decisions quickly and easily. To learn more, go to ChaikinAnalytics.com. That's C-H-A-I-K-I-N Analytics.com. Mark Chaikin, who's on our show today, is on a webinar today at 4:15 Eastern on the ultimate stock checklist and the best small cap stocks to buy today. To learn more, go to checkinanalytics.com/webinars. I'm also putting the link to that webinar in our pre-market prep chat. So that's it for us today. Hope you enjoyed our show. We got a lot of news and a lot of news after the bell that we'll have to discuss tomorrow on our final show of the week. So have a good one until then, and good luck out there.